Third hour, Darren Dotick and Chase, right here on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. A lot of things still to get to here on the program. Darren McFarland and Willie Dotick. Chase McCabe is off today. We say hello and good afternoon to Mike Florio. Does a great job covering the NFL for NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk. He is on the line with us. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic on this beautiful fall day here in Nashville. Of course, the Titans coming off a big overtime win over the Ravens. And I just want to start there with you. Let's start with the Ravens side. Right now they're dealing with a lot of COVID issues. Their facilities are still closed down. Who knows whether their game against the Steelers Thursday night will happen or not. But just your observation of looking at this Ravens team right now, today, compared to the team we saw just basically chew everybody up and spit them out through the regular season, especially on offense. They look like a different team. What's different in your eyes about them?
Well, I think one of the fundamental differences is, and this applies to any team that has a special season and doesn't finish it with a Super Bowl appearance. You have to go back to what former Vikings and Cardinals coach Dennis Green called the Valley of Zero and Zero and start all over again. And usually what you hear from a team when that happens is, we forget about what happened last year. Last year doesn't matter. That's Bill Belichick's mantra. Last year gets buried, it's done, it's gone. And after the Ravens beat the Browns 38-6 week one, I spoke to John Harbaugh from the locker room for our NBC pregame interviews and preparations. And I asked him, what have you done to get your guys to forget about last year? And he said, they're not. They're embracing it. They want to match it. They want to exceed it. And I think what happens is, it's a bar that's so hard to meet week in and week out. And you realize week in and week out how difficult it is to have that kind of excellence. It doesn't take many losses to put you in a position where you can't match 14-2. Now they've got double their losses from last year, and you realize it's a fundamentally different season. You know, Lamar Jackson recently made the comment, everybody wants to see us lose. I don't know that that's the case, but the reality is everybody is relishing the opportunity to beat them. They're a measuring stick team, and I just think it all accumulates. It all adds up. It's too many things coming down on the team at once, and now here they are on the ropes, and on Thursday night, the Steelers are going to try to punch them through.
Yep, and the Titans, of course, ended their season last year in Baltimore, so they've now gone to Baltimore twice in the calendar year of 2020 and beaten the Ravens. And, of course, the Titans would finish off that magical run with a loss in Kansas City in the AFC Championship game to the Chiefs. So when you look at this Titans team, what do you see right now through your eyes? Are you buying them? Do you think this is a team like last year's team that can make a run? What do you think when you see the Titans?
Yeah, I don't see an elite team because they're not consistent enough and because their special teams hurts them at the wrong moments, like with the short punt and the block punt, bang, bang, against the Colts, and a 17-3 lead becomes a 27-17 deficit. You can't have that when you're a grind it out and keep it close kind of a team. But they are capable of getting hot in January. They understand what it's like to play in those pressure situations. They have the physicality on both sides of the ball, although the defense hasn't been as good as maybe it needs to be this year. But I think they are extremely competitive, and I would not want to see them in the divisional round if I was the Steelers or the Chiefs or one of these other great teams in the AFC. And I definitely don't want to see them in the wild card round if they end up not winning the division. If the Colts win the division and the Titans still get in, and let's say I'm the two seed, let's say I'm the Steelers or the Chiefs, and I have the Titans instead of a bye this year because it's the first year the two seed plays in the wild card round, I don't want the Titans rolling into town.
You just recently put something on Pro Football Talk about, and I'm going to have you kind of explain to us and our listeners about possibly, I guess, a new rule that could be in place or something that could affect when it comes to the ownership structure of these franchises that could affect the way the Broncos and the Titans are set up. Maybe help us understand a little bit more of what you were talking about.
Yeah, the problem as it relates to the Titans has its roots in the estate planning that was done by Bud Adams, the founder of the team. He directed a third of the team to each of the branches of his family tree. And the problem is that there was never final say given to to any of the three branches. So they've kind of had to agree among themselves who has the vote for the purposes of league matters. And the league has quietly been pushing the Titans for several years now to resolve it. And I think the tentative resolution is Amy Adams-Strunk has it for now until she is no longer running the team, and then it falls to Ken Adams IV, the grandson of Bud Adams. I think that's how it was resolved, and I thought that was good enough for the league. But the league wants to have a clear, undeniable, unequivocal, non-transferable to someone else in the ownership group. It's got to be in that line of the controlling owner, and it goes with the controlling owner's estate or gets sold by the controlling owner. They want that, and they have adopted earlier this month a provision that gives the commissioner the authority to ultimately fine up to $10 million per year a team that isn't in compliance and an owner who isn't in compliance up to $2 million a year. This is their hammer. This is their way of getting the Titans to finally do what needs to be done. And it also is relevant to the Broncos because they've got a convoluted Willy Wonka contest out there to determine which of Pat Boland's children ends up running the team. The other six children have to sign off, though, when it's time to give the winner final say. And if they don't, that team's getting sold. So this is about the league's desire to have one person who is clearly in charge, and that's not transferable, like I said, unless you sell or unless you die and the interest passes through your estate to someone else.
So Amy Adams-Strunk is clearly in charge now, but just so I'm trying to understand this, they're basically saying, you know, for these owners that are, you know, unfortunately passing away and they're leaving it to all their children, and you've got them divvying up six pies or four pies or what have you, nobody, and everybody's got equal share. Are you saying somebody needs to be over 50% of the ownership group? Is that what they're looking for?
No. Somebody has to be given power to make the decision.
Okay,
and
got
when
you.
They did the Bud Adams will, they didn't include which one had final say. And, you know, it's a baton that's been passed around, they have to get it worked out better than Amy Adams-Strunk is going to do it until she's done, and then Kenneth Adams IV is going to do it after that. It has to be undeniable, unequivocal, non-transferable, unless it's part of what's given in your estate planning or what is sold to someone else. But that's that piece to run the team. Someone has to have that clearly and without question, without fights, without squabbles. The NFL doesn't want to have to get in the middle of who's actually in control. It has to be clear with each franchise who's in control. And if it's not clear, then the hammer can fall financially. Now, Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals, wanted to say, instead of taxing the teams or fining the teams, just take away their vote if they're not in compliance. That position didn't prevail. If you're not in compliance, you're talking about some very significant financial penalties.
That makes a lot more sense. The Tommy Smith era, luckily it was short here. The son-in-law, that did not go over well, so that makes a lot of sense. I want to ask you something I've been bringing up on the show the last couple of days, because you've got the national platform, and just see where you go with this and maybe see if this is something that you'll be bringing up on Pro Football Talk every morning. So we know Patrick Mahomes. We get it. We watch him every week, and what he did Sunday night, you know, everybody could see that coming. Too much time, and he is right now the MVP favorite. And there's been a lot of discussion of Russell Wilson, and he's starting to fade a little bit. As Seattle has been losing Kyler Murray and others. But as Pittsburgh keeps mounting up victories, Mike, I would just like to know, and when you look at his numbers, 25 touchdowns and four picks, or 24 and five picks, whatever it is, and over 2,500 yards passing, why is nobody bringing up Ben Roethlisberger for the MVP?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And I think it has its roots in the idea that people don't regard the Steelers as the best team in the league, even though they're undefeated. Because the thinking is the Chiefs are still better than the Steelers, and if they would play, the Chiefs would win. So that's why Mahomes has the more clear edge. Also, there's nothing spectacular about Roethlisberger in comparison to some of these other quarterbacks we see who really can buy time with their legs, who can take the play that's called, and if that play disintegrates, they can draft a second play on the fly and get it done, right? Those are the people who seem to be gathering at the top. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Well, Aaron Rodgers has that too. He's got that mobility.
Yes, he does.
He knows
yep.
how to make things happen. So now, Ben Roethlisberger is moving up. Last week, Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, and Josh Allen were all plus 2,500 propositions. That means you bet $100 and you win 2,500 if they win. This week, Roethlisberger's up to plus 1,600, which means that people are realizing that he's moving in that direction. And Tom Brady went the other way. He's at plus 3,300. So Roethlisberger's getting there. And if they finish 16-0 and they have the one seed in the AFC, it's going to be hard to ignore him, especially when there's really no one else on that team that stands out as an MVP candidate. They have a bunch of great players, but they don't have one of those transcendent talents that we must see, that we are fascinated by. And, look, they're a lot better this year with Ben there. And he probably won't get comeback player of the year either, though, because of Alex Smith. But, hey, if nothing else, if they make it to the Super Bowl and we find out the night before the Super Bowl that someone else won the MVP, maybe that's the last little bit of motivation to get them to finish the job.
Oh, I thought you nailed it. I just think the other portion of this is just watch the Steelers. This should go in his favor, too. Just look at the Steelers last year without him and look at them this year with him. I mean, they're a completely different team. They were lucky to win 8 games last year. I mean, that should solidify him even more moving up into the MVP discussion. Pittsburgh without him is a completely different team.
I really do think that what they went through last year with the absence of Big Ben, having to go with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges and fight and scratch and claw every week, and they weren't dead until the very end of the season, I think that has laid the foundation for what we see this year, because they really found a way to get the most out of the pieces they had. And I think that spirit is still there, that just find a way. It's there every week. So what happens? They win every week. And I think it really serves them well that they were as competitive as they were in 2019 without Roethlisberger. But you're right. He's back now, and they go from being a team that couldn't make the playoffs to a team that has a shot at becoming the third unbeaten team in the Super Bowl era.
Every time somebody says Duck Hodges, I start thinking of cartoon characters or something. Mike Florio is with us, outstanding reporter for NBC and Pro Football Talk. Mike, you had a great conversation with A.J. Brown right after the Titans got the win in Baltimore. And I'm just curious your thoughts. The Titans say, hey, we do this every week. You know, we go to midfield and we have our little pregame thing. But when you're on another team's field and you're on their logo, you can see why it generates a reaction. But so how do you feel about that? And also that Harbaugh was the one that came over and said something. It was kind of an interesting dynamic, and they sort of put a lid on it after the game and downplayed it. But it was certainly a spicy beginning.
Well, John Harbaugh is a very fiery competitor. He does a much better job than his brother Jim of keeping it under wraps, except when somebody kicks the plug out of the wall and turns off the lights in the Superdome during Super Bowl 47. Other than that, John Harbaugh keeps it under control. And I really do think, in a weird sort of way, he was trying to give his team a spark. But it can't be the coach confronting the opposing players. It has to be the coach telling his players, get your butts out there and defend our crest. It was that Ravens crest. It's not even their logo. I don't know what that thing is. It's in the middle of the field. It just makes it harder to see what yard the team's on when they get close to it. But A.J. Brown told me, and he laughed. He was stunned. He said, the coaches are approaching players? Really? And he kind of got himself in the middle of it. He said, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But it also let him know, and the rest of the Titans players know, it was going to be a physical game. This is the tone that was being set. And he said, some people think that stuff like that doesn't matter, but it definitely made a difference.
It was a physical game for sure. Mike, leave us with this. You did a great interview with our afternoon show with Floyd Reese and Jared Stillman at the peak of the scrutiny when the Titans were going through their issue with the COVID. It's interesting now that the Ravens have had their situation now just a couple of days before they're supposed to play on Thursday. But take us from that point to now. How much the league has learned from what the Titans went through, and Have they adjusted much? Because, you know, you think back to what was said back during those times. You had people like they were telling you they should lose a first-round pick. They should get fined $1 million, suspend the coach for the rest of the season. We've really changed the tone since then.
Yeah, and let me be clear on what was going around at the time. The league was telling teams, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. The league lost a lot of credibility with some of the teams that it was talking to about what was coming. And I think the challenge for the league is to balance this notion of we're all in it together and people are going to have these outbreaks and we just have to deal with it. Balance that with the idea that there should be a punitive element. And we've seen the Raiders get punished several times. The Titans ultimately were fined $350,000, which is a far cry from what people were led to believe by the league office was going to happen. So, you know, I really feel like the league has its hands so full with holding it all together and keeping all the games played and preventing outbreaks that would result in games being canceled and money being forfeited to the networks, that they can't focus on punishment the way they should. And the punishment comes off as very inconsistent and erratic and unpredictable, and that's not a way to run an in-house system of discipline. You have to be consistent. You have to be fair. And it just feels like they happen to whack whoever lands on their radar screen at a time when they feel like issuing a punishment. And that's not good for anybody. And they've gotten away from it because as we get deeper and deeper into the year, and as the pandemic continues to get worse and worse, and I fear, and I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that on the backside of Thanksgiving, it's going to get even worse. They're just trying to hold it all together to get the games in, and they're not nearly as worried about punishment as they were earlier in the year, because I think they realize everybody gets it now, and everybody is simply trying to keep rowing the boat in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with you. The challenges are not done. Mike, quickly, do you think the Titans did convince the league when it really looked bad? It looked like they were, you know, blowing through stop signs, ignoring protocols, all of that. Do you think they convinced the league that, no, we were trying to do the right things here, and it's not as bad as it looked? I mean, because I think the league completely did a 180 when it looked like they were pointing all the fingers, and then maybe they decided to look in the mirror and more, well, maybe we need to make some adjustments with the protocols.
Let me take it a step farther than that, and I have extensive experience with and knowledge of the way the league has botched investigations in the past, the bounty scandal with the Saints, Deflategate with the Patriots. I believe, based on my own experience and based on what I've heard from others, specifically as it relates to the Titans, that the Titans were able to put together enough proof of the league botching the investigation of the Titans to get the league to back off. That's what I believe happened. I don't know that to the point where I can say it definitely happened, but it doesn't surprise me because in the past we've seen the NFL botch investigations, and there's a theory making the rounds through the same people who were led to believe that the Titans were going to get whacked, that the Titans must have come up with something that they presented to the league saying, go ahead and whack us, and this is what we're going to argue on appeal, and it's going to make you look like essentially a bunch of Keystone Cops.
Interesting. Good stuff, as always. Keep up the good work, Mike. Thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Hey, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Stay safe, and here's hoping we get all our games in.
Yep, absolutely. Same to you. That is Mike Florio, NBC Sports. Pro Football Talk is where you can find his work, and we do appreciate the visit.
Wow.
That was very interesting there at very end.
Well, you remember how much we were playing clips interview with Jared and Floyd. When it looked like the sky was the limit on what the Titans were going to get, right? And it went from that to essentially nothing, right? Within another few days after that, remember the Adam Schefter thing, and so
do you
that
buy
was
what
great,
he just
but,
said?
Oh, I it had to be something like that, right?
I mean, he just admitted, like, I don't have, but this is just my idea. Just like when I was throwing out stuff about the Titans, saying, look, I know how this works. Behind the scenes, I know how these national people operate, and for people like Mike Florio and Adam Schefter, they're not just throwing stuff out there to see if it sticks. Okay, they have been told specific things. They are getting told information to come out this strongly against the Titans, and that is so interesting how it went from that, which was, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was like at a 14, right? And then it dies down to all the way to like a 1 or a 2. And you're like,
I think it was a 1.
It was a 1.
It could not have been higher than a 1. When you get $350,000, like, I guess that would be a 1.
A 1.
A 10 was however many million dollars. What was it, like $10
draft
million?
Picks
draft
and,
picks. And,
you know, you see even
Vrabel
suspended
for the year. Yes. I mean, that's a 10.
Yes. Oh, that was a 14.
So he hit on it. That last answer was the investigation had flaws. The Titans were able to say, these are the protocols. We didn't break the protocol. So it's just interesting how it's evolved. We don't even talk about it now because it's so much in the past. It's all about the next game. But that is a fascinating story. And as Mike Florio said, they're not out of the woods, right? There's, with the cases going up the way they are at an alarming rate, there's still probably some challenges ahead of just trying to get the season completed.
Very interesting, because that was a story that dominated our airwaves for a good while. And to know now he's just sit there and said, hey, I've been a part of all these investigations in the past and seen how the league has botched investigations, that he wouldn't be surprised if the Titans said, fine, okay, throw the book at us, and then we're going to counter with this when we appeal it and make you look really bad. You know, like your protocol saying it was okay to get on the plane, certainly, you know, and go to Minnesota, right? Like, let's just start there.
Makes
it
you
was
wonder,
okay,
who's,
right? Like,
who
it was
were
okay.
The investigators? He called them Keystone Cops. Like, who were the people that came to Nashville? We don't really know the names of any of the people that came in, right?
Yep.
Was it the Keystone Cops?
What a turn of
Coach
events,
Vrabel,
that story.
This is security up front. I've got the Keystone Cops here. They're from the NFL. They want to come in and do an investigation. Okay, let them in.
Well, let me just say this, just to go back to, if there's anybody that should say this, it should be me, because I have been really critical of the Titans franchise, ownership group, for a good while, because rightfully so, they deserved it. If you don't see how far they've come along with the people they now have in place, they would have never been able to pull off. I have no doubts that they didn't. They've got some sharp people over there working now. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't lay out to the league when they got in inside those walls and said, yeah, and then this is what you guys have messed up on. And the league's like, we understand. They could have never done that 5 years ago. 5 years ago, the league would have probably hammered them, because they didn't have that structure that they've got over there now where they could push back with the league and say, well, yeah, but, you know, we were just following – your rules. You know, we were just doing what you said we should do. And, you know, now you've changed that rule, or you're going to change that rule because of this, because you see it, this doesn't work either, that this was flawed, a flawed system. And so probably the league was like, yeah. But that's a credit to them, because they've got people in place now and they've got a structure in place to do something like that, where 5 years ago, you just heard me bring up the Tommy Smith era. Oh, my gosh. Or the last day, you know, the end of Bud Adams. Are you kidding me? It was a rudderless ship. There was no one at charge. They had hit the iceberg, and there was nobody at the wheel.
Well, that was something that I think was overshadowed by how the interview ended when we're looking back on the crisis they went through with the virus. But, you know, that – we've known for years, like ever since Bud Adam died, we know that he equally one-third, one-third, one-third. And on a sidebar, let's just be glad Bud Adams doesn't have six factions of the family, like the Bolins in Denver. What did he call them?
Willy Wonka's. The Willy Wonka contest.
Imagine
they're
trying to figure out
the golden
puzzle.
Ticket.
Yeah, good luck with that one. Holy cow. At least there's only three. But
Was he referencing buying a lot of candy bars? What did he mean?
I don't know.
That?
Yeah, Wonka bars with the gold.
Looking
there,
for the golden ticket?
Is Johnny Depp out there somewhere?
Maybe
I don't,
they own
I don't
a
know.
Chocolate factory.
Maybe there's a chocolate factory.
That's a good
yeah.
point. Yeah.
But we knew when it was one-third, one-third, one-third that, hey, so this doesn't quite work in terms of NFL ownership and how it's supposed to be. The perception has changed, right? Because since Amy Adams Strunk has taken over, it's been such a pleasant surprise, because now it's like you only hear from her, she's the one running the show.
Yep. And everybody says that.
She's perceived,
right?
She's perceived way, way more in a positive way than Tommy Smith. It's not even close, right? So everything looks good from a public aspect, but from the way the thing is drawn up, it still is not, does not satisfy the NFL's guidelines. So they still got to figure out how to deal with that, it sounds like, from Mike. So that's an interesting story.
And don't forget, even before Tommy Smith, when I was banging the drums on these airwaves every single day, who are these people? And I would just read the names. Who is in charge? Who is over there? Who is running this thing? We just got a bunch of names. Remember, we had five names. And it's like, who are these people? Who's running the show over there? And then finally, you know, then Tommy Smith jumped up there, and that was a disaster. And then, you know, I think the league probably also jumped in because they were a disaster. They weren't showing up to meetings. There was really no representation for, you know, or it was Steve Underwood representing them. It's like, give me a break. Your attorney is showing up. And it's like the league basically forced them, which has been a good thing. I mean, I'm glad the league did, because Amy Adams Strunk, it forced somebody to stand up and say, all right, I'm in charge. And since she's done that, since that decision has been made, you know, it has looked and felt completely different.
Definitely how the team is run. But as Mike Florio is, but as Mike Florio has reported, it still doesn't meet the guidelines. It never has ever since Bud Adams passed away. So there's still that dilemma that they've somehow got to shore up here.
Yep. All right. We will come back and we will take a look at our new top 10. What was the movement from this time last week? We did this last week on Tuesday during the third hour after we talked to Chris Sanders, Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. We unveiled our top 10. What's the shift look like? And in just a week's time in the NFL, we're going to do this throughout the rest of the season just because that's what's fun about the NFL, the movement and how things change from week to week. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.